Here's an experiment for you. Take passionate experts in human resource technology. Invite cross-industry experts from inside and outside HR. Mix in what's happening in people analytics today. Give them the technology to connect. Hit record. Pour their discussions into a beaker. Mix thoroughly and voila! You get the HR Data Labs podcast, where we explore the impact of data and analytics to your business. We may get passionate and even irreverent, but count on each episode challenging and enhancing your understanding of the way people data can be used to solve real-world problems. Now, here's your host, David Turetsky.
Hello, and welcome to the HR Data Labs podcast. I am your host, David Turetsky. Like always, I have a fascinating guest with me today, my friend, Robert Mattson. Hello, Robert. How are you?
Hey, David. Thanks so much for having me. I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
Robert, anytime you and I get together, we have fun. In fact, it takes me back to the time when I first met you. You interviewed for a job at Workscape. We met for no more than 5 seconds before we realized we were going to be best friends forever.
Very, very true. And now you've actually been to my son's bar mitzvah ceremony. It's been a joy.
It has. So that leads me to give you a quick introduction. As I said, you had worked at Workscape for a while. That's where we first got introduced and we had worked together so well there. But why don't you take us through some of the other things that you've done?
Well, since the days at Workscape, and there were a number of jobs before then, but Workscape got bought by ADP, and I stayed at ADP for a while, working in a very large organization. But I spent about 20 years in the HCM space, in the human capital management space, everything from talent management at places like Workscape and ADP. I actually worked at Ceridian, a VP of content marketing there, and I worked as a VP of marketing at Smashfly on the recruiting side. And now I have started my own business about 3 years ago called ITM Speakers, which brought my history of coaching and messaging and also presentation skills, because I've got a background in theater. And the funny thing is, whenever I joined a company, I would hear questions like, oh, you're an actor. I was like, yes, I am. Can you write the script for us? Sure, I can. Can you help our CEO be better in front of a camera? Yes, I can do that. And suddenly I said, you know something? I enjoy that part of my job so much that I think it might be time for me to start a business where I can utilize that and help a lot of different people and not just the company that I happen to work for at the time.
And one of the best things about Robert is if you follow him on LinkedIn, and the link will be inside the podcast notes, but if you don't, he gives phenomenal advice on how to speak in front of a camera, how to have a presence, how to set up your home setup. So for those of you who want to look better, sound better using your camera, go and listen to what Robert will tell you and teach you about how to be a better participant in Zoom meetings and how to really prepare yourself for it, because it's brilliant.
I appreciate that, David. I actually do a lot what I call home office triage. So I have a session with people. We take about a half an hour and we take a look at everything from their framing, their lighting, their audio, their video, and figure out what's going to make them look more professional and also get people to focus on them. Because that's one of the key things. You don't want people focusing on distractions. You want them focusing on you and your message. So it's really all part of the same thing, from building a message right to making sure it's heard.
Right, absolutely. One fun thing that you may not know about Robert, as a longtime dilettante, he spent about 10 to 15 years in being a playwright, actor, singer-songwriter, furniture builder. So you have the Swedish roots, so IKEA is in your blood. Voiceover artist, photographer. Wow, you are a renaissance man.
Yeah, I mean, being a long-term dilettante, I usually spend 10 or 15 years kind of diving deep into something. And it's not like I totally give it up. I'm still a playwright. I'm still a singer. I still have guitars in my closet. And I have furniture around the house that I have built. But you tend to focus. There's only so much creativity you have. And there's only so much energy you have. So I tend to kind of go all in. I've got a 24 by 24 foot photography studio. And just last week, I'm doing fewer shoots now with obviously the pandemic, but you can do them as long as you're careful and safe.
Right.
And I told people I was so excited that I was shooting a puppeteer last week. And I was shooting a lovely woman named Honey and her fiance, Kenneth, and I shot their engagement photos last week at a puppet theater in the outside environs in Brookline Village.
Yeah, by the way, this is recorded. So the fact that you shot them, you were taking photographs of them, just to be clear.
Absolutely correct.
Okay, just to be clear, no one hated their puppetry so much that they wanted them shot and they hired you.
I was quite impressed with their puppetry, actually.
Okay, good. So, Robert, interesting topic for today is that if we look at data and how we can make it more meaningful and memorable, it's all about the storytelling. And for those people who have heard us talk before about being able to have accurate data and being able to do something with it, we've had a couple episodes where a couple of guests have talked about storytelling, but you have a very unique take on what storytelling can bring to the equation.
Yeah, I think so, David, because oftentimes I deal with a lot of salespeople and executives and people that suffer from what I call the curse of knowledge. They know all this right. stuff and they want to get it out. And when you're talking to salespeople, right. it's features, facts, and functions. When you're talking to HR people, it's a lot about policies, procedures, maybe pertinent data, and it's all important. But the thing is, it's not about what you know. It's about how you're trying to change the thinking of the other people and then working your way back from that. I often tell people, if you're shooting a bow and arrow, the drama is not at you. It's at the target. And you want to make sure that you are focusing on the target and picking the right arrow that will hit your target. So to your point, there's a science behind storytelling. And a lot of it is the biochemistry of how people absorb information. When you're sitting on a call like this, people want to learn. They want to hear something. But oftentimes their brain is fighting them because the information that's hitting them is not hitting the right levers within the brain. There are right. three major parts of the brain that you have to be worried about. And if you put your hand up, put your thumb in and put your fist over it, you're actually making a little scale model of your brain. This is the neocortex. That's the limbic system. And this is the amygdala or the lizard brain. So the neocortex is all about data. So if you were doing your taxes or doing some accounting and you were scanning your brain, this would be all lit up. But mm-hmm. that part doesn't really focus you. This part is the limbic system, memory and emotion.
He's pointing to his thumb for those people who don't realize that we're actually on audio only.
Yeah. So in the center of your brain is the limbic system. And the limbic system is about emotion and memory. If you remember when you got your driver's right. license or when you got married or the first time you got dumped, that's because the limbic system has taken emotion, put
very
it in.
Very long time ago, by the way.
I don't know which one, but anyway.
All of the above.
Which one? So it's locking in your memory with the emotion, and that's right. why you remember it so clearly. And the amygdala is actually, right. That's the lightning quick digital computer of your brain. That's the fight or flight engine. So we're right. here because our ancestors had a really valid and well-run amygdala. So if it saw something and said, that's dangerous, we ran. And if not, we stayed. And the thing is, you want to not connect with the neocortex so much. You want to connect with the limbic system and the amygdala. You want people to be evaluating what's going on, and you want people to remember what's going on. If you just give them data, it's tough for them to hold on to it.
And that brings us to our first question. So that's a great transition point, which is, this is a podcast about HR data analytics. Well, so I have a storyteller here as a guest. How can we connect the storytelling to actually being able to leverage better, as you were talking about, and using the different parts of your brain? How can you leverage it better to make the story connect with the person that you're trying to sell this data to?
Well, that's to get away from that curse of knowledge. So many people focus on what I want to talk about versus saying, who is my audience? The first thing of hitting your target is picking your target. Who are the people that you want to change their thinking? If you're in a meeting and you want to make sure that you're talking to the rank and file, all the general employees, and you've got some HR data, maybe you're changing your benefits and you want them to understand why this change is actually good for them. That your target are the employees. Or is the employees, and your goal is to say, they will think at the end of this talk that this change of benefits has actually some positive upside for them. But if your target are the managers, that you have to pass that information on to them so they could pass on to employees in their conversations, that's your target, and you need to change your purpose. So once you figure that out, then you have to look back into that whole arrow and target analogy. What is your arrow?
Right.
What is the data you want to pick that is going to carry that? And how can you wrap that in some storytelling to make sure that people are going to remember it? Because if you give me a piece of data, 3 days later, I have a 5% chance of remembering it. If you tell me a story, 3 days later, I have a 70% chance to remember it.
And that's really important right there, because we're so awash in data and we're so awash in statistics and measurements that a lot of times we in HR, we remember those statistics like our turnover rate or the number of hires we had in a particular period. And we hold on to them and on not realizing the fact that we also have all the context for it as well. And we can create a story around the data because we do have the context. And creating that story and being able to have it connect to that audience that you're talking about and being able to shoot the arrow at a very precise point at the target, which is the audience that you're getting to, should be easy. But we have a very hard time. We struggle with that story. Are there ways we might be able to get that story closer to the target without having to retrain ourselves and become statistical specialists and really being able to be deep in the analytics?
So, David, this is a great point. This is something I know that you and I, when we worked together, had a history of this model. And it's the is, does, means model. People right. get so caught in the is, where yep. they usually get caught in the is and does. But what you need to live is the does and means. So it's right. the emotional impact of it. What does it mean to the individual? And can you tell a right. story around there? I teach classes where I teach storytelling and presentation skills. And I tell people, if you're trying to change someone's mind about an auto assembly line, don't tell them a story about an auto assembly line. Tell them a story about a bakery, because you want to get them away from their day to day so you can change their thinking on a higher level topic. So that's right. how you wrap the story around it. If you're trying to talk about the benefit, you know, the compensation, so we are trying to grow our company. So we are actually being a little tighter on our compensation budget this year. And you've got a data point where we're doing 1% increases this year. But you might want to talk a story about how the company was founded and how everyone pitched in and brought things into the break room.
So, Robert, that was great talking about the way in which we can wrap our heads around. Literally, we talked about how to wrap our heads around data and make a story out of it. But how do you actually create a good story?
Well, the good news is that there are structures that are age-old structures, and they teach people how to build stories. Steven Spielberg has a phenomenal quote, and everyone's probably familiar with Steven Spielberg as a great theatrical storyteller. Spielberg said that people have forgotten how to tell stories. There's no middle and end. People just start beginning and can keep beginning through their story. You have to have a beginning and a middle and an end. And David, can I share something with you? I'd like to share a little bit.
Please.
So
sure.
Let me show you a structure that is used in everything from Hollywood blockbusters to fairy tales and bedtime stories. So it's a three-act structure. Now, in Hollywood, you have an intro, you have conflict, and you have resolution.
Yep.
So in the intro, you want to make sure that everyone understands the setting. So in Star Wars, you met Luke Skywalker and Leia and R2-D2 and Darth Vader, learned about the rebellion, all that type of stuff. And then you had the conflict in Star Wars, where they went and they rescued Leia from the Death Star and all that, and resolution, where they blew up the Death Star. The difference in business and HR is part of business. Is that you have to do the intro, but you want to open it with some intrigue.
Right.
Because you want people to want to hear you. You have to prove to them that you're worth listening to.
Right.
Then the middle section is you want to persuade them. So this is where your arguments come in, why something is important. And this is where a lot of that data comes in. Data is a great persuader, good proof points. And then finally, recall. You want to give them something that they'll remember. Okay. Because if you do everything perfectly in a one-hour meeting and everyone in that meeting forgets what you told them 5 minutes after that meeting. You're really not that effective. So what I tell people, you don't want to win the meeting. You want to win the 5 minutes after, the conversation after they get off the call or walk out of the room.
Sure.
Because then your message can actually go viral. Your message, not something that they interpreted. But if they remember your message, that can be spread throughout the employee population the right way.
I think all too often we find ourselves in meetings that we don't know what the purpose is. We don't know why we've been invited. We lose attention span very quickly, especially given the fact we have so many competing priorities going on. And I think what you're bringing up is that that intrigue needs to play into the things that tug at their, not just emotions, but the things that tug at the reasons why they're struggling, or the reasons why they're having problems, or the reasons why they're at work. Give them some reason to remember what you're, as you were talking about, the message, so that it's not, to me, it's not just after the 5 minutes, because we do have such terrible attention spans, mm-hmm. but that you change something for them and they have a different opinion of you, or they have a new appreciation for what you've told them, so that they can come back to you, if not remembering what you told them, whether it's about turnover, whether it's about the labor cost of a group, whatever the subject was, but at least they now regard you as being a place of or a resource for insight and information that they can use to make better decisions. To me, that's what this whole thing of HR Data Labs is about, is finding the ways in which we can leverage data and insight to be able to help do our jobs better. And I think when you're telling good stories, and this is your point, I think, and you'll hopefully correct me here, but when you're telling good stories, it's not just about the meaning of the story. It's about how those people who are in your audience were made to feel about the story. What did it change in them to be able to make that connection and be able to then either tell a story themselves, or to know you were the person, you were the right person to talk to about it?
So, David, you just gave me an opening for an 8-hour podcast, because there's so much richness in what you just said. There's so much there. Emotionality is important. There is the spreading that information beyond the walls. There's the memory of it. There's also the credibility of the person. And I have a lot of people that I work with, a lot of executives, and they say, well, I'm doing this talk and I want to open up with my background and my resume. Like, no, don't do that. I tell people, don't credential yourself. Don't tell me you're good. Show me you're great. Because as someone in an audience, I am selfish. I tell people I'm selfish, I'm lazy, and I'm smug. I'm selfish because I want something out of this interaction. I'm lazy because I don't want to have to do the math myself. I want you to give me the answers, not make me figure things out. And every time I see a spreadsheet on a slide, I go ballistic. Because you're making people do math and distracting them. And I'm smug.
Sure.
I've got the feeling, why are you going to teach me something? I know my life. I know my problems. How are you going to show me something that's valued? So if people start thinking about, I need to address those three things, prove to those people why they should listen to me, not by telling them they should listen to me, but by showing them I can give them value. That's one of the big things that I think is a hard thing for all of us to do. And I think it's that whole fraud syndrome that most of us feel many times in our lives, especially
Absolutely.
When you start a new position or you're like, I don't know what I'm doing yet. I want to credential myself and show them that, you know, I'm a quality person. No, no, no. Show them you've done the work. And as HR professionals with data, you are actually one of the archetypes of a storyteller. You are the research storyteller. And a lot of the great industry analysts are that type of people, because they go out and do all this research and then share that information. And that's why we pay so much for industry analysts, because they've done the work.
Like what you hear so far? Make sure you never miss a show by clicking the subscribe button now. This podcast is made possible by Turetsky Consulting and listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
I think that's a good transition for the third question, which is, you get a good story written and you have to know how to tell it well. And there are some people who are really good storytellers, and you're one of them. And I've listened to you many times. Really teach me about what you're talking about, because it's hard not to listen to you, because you do talk with authority. So How do you tell a good story?
Telling a story is kind of like if you've ever been whitewater rafting. So a great river of whitewater rafting is fantastic, but without the proper guide, it's not a fun day. It's a nightmare that you might not survive.
Sure.
So you are the guide through your story. After you've built it and you know the twists and the turns and the high points and the low points, then it's your job to show people where they are, because we'll miss them as an audience.
Sure.
So there are many tools that we have: visuals, audio, and most of all, timing and intent. If you are going to put a visual up on the screen, make sure it's an impactful visual. Make sure it's something that will show the high level, but not distract from your story. It should support your story. Audio is the same thing. Now, you can use audio, but usually the audio is your voice.
Sure.
And
of course,
you have to master your voice. In my class, I show an actual waveform of the first 90 seconds of MLK's I Have a Dream speech. And I show it to people not to show volume, but to show the pauses in between that MLK uses so effectively, and great orators do.
Absolutely.
Because he wants to give you time to absorb what he said and think about it. Every presentation is a conversation. It's just that one side of it is usually responding back in silence.
Right.
So if I start saying, and if we take a look at this piece of data right here, I've shown you vocally that that's an important piece of data. So you start to get the performance aspect of things where you are guiding people through the high points and low points. And that's one of the troubles I think most people have. They don't know the high points and low points because they are just so focused on getting all the data out. They have to focus on what's important and then use all their tools to make sure that people are focused at the right times, because we can't focus all the time. We have to take moments of respite.
Absolutely. And I think it's definitely a skill that gets developed over time. And for those people who've actually seen good presentations, the people who are speaking to you and they're looking at you as they're speaking, which is another thing, connecting with the audience, but they allow you time to process. And I think you brought something up before, Robert, which is really kind of interesting, which is the visuals have to match what you're talking about, but not make them process it too much, because then it distracts from not just you and your message, but it also distracts from what you're trying to achieve. And I think in HR, especially with HR analytics, we have an extremely hard time being able to do the extrapolation of what the visual is on the screen for the person without trying to allow them to have time to look at it and to process it themselves. So if you put a big graph up on the screen, the first thing that someone's going to do is they're going to try and interpret it for themselves. So if that's a turnover graph up on the screen, what does it mean to me? Do I believe the data? You know, what's happening in my group? Why is it so high? Is it high because of this, that, and the other thing? That's context that I know. And then you completely lose what the person's talking about unless they're giving you a chance to make that process, or you're personalizing it to the audience and you're making sure they understand why it's there. And I think HR struggles with that, giving them data, processing it, and also being able to keep the message.
Yeah, I've heard many guidelines. You know, I've heard no more than 7 bullets and 7 words per bullet. And if I saw that, I would explode at somebody. Give me one number. Maybe give me 2 numbers. Yeah. Maybe give me 3 numbers, but don't give me more than that. Because people say, well, I'm actually multitasking. I'm listening as I'm reading. No one can multitask. You time slice. And every time you time slice, you lose efficiency. So as an HR person, if you're trying to get people to understand that you've gone from a 4% turnover to a 6% turnover, give me a 4 and a 6. That's all I need. Because that is your story. And that will keep people focused on you. Because I come from a musical theater background. So I've seen many Broadway shows. Backdrops are important, but they're not the star. You are the star. Your slide and your numbers, they're the backdrop. People should see it, know where you are, and then just listen to you perform.
And by the way, I think that's the reason why, if you watch quality presentations, and both of us have seen very high quality, very impactful presentations, that the entire consideration of the slide itself, if there is a PowerPoint being shown, the consideration of the slide, and what's on it is probably one of the most important things that a person can do, not just preparation, but also making sure that, to your point, you're not distracting. The time slice that you're allowing someone to read the slide is appropriate for your preparation and for your talk track. And you'll kill your story if you have way too much on the slide, because people will stop listening to your story. And if they lose, as you mentioned, that a good story arc, if they lose a part, especially a critical part of your story, then your story's done. They won't be able to process it. I mean, look at Little Red Riding Hood. Unless we know that it's the wolf in Granny's clothing in Little Red Riding Hood, then kind of the end doesn't really matter as much. Grandma, what large teeth you have. Well, thanks. I don't know if you noticed. I went to the dentist a couple of days ago and they, you know, they did a little bit of work.
Yeah. And also the point, David, that we made before, that they'll remember your fact 5% of the time. They'll remember your story 70% of the time. So unless you're wrapping that fact in a story, your chances of them retaining it are going to dip remarkably.
Right. And I love the, and I don't know if this is a quote that's actually a good usable quote, but I love the quote about, it's not what the audience remembers about you, about the facts and figures, but how they make you feel.
Yeah, I think it's a version of the Maya Angelou quote.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant quote. And I wish I could remember all of it, Maya. I'm sorry. I'll make sure I get it right in the podcast notes, but it really connects with me, because I really want the audience, especially the audience of this podcast, to know that what we're trying to do here is to help them be able to make that connection in the story. And I think you've done that quite well today.
Well, thanks, David. I appreciate it. I think storytelling should be part of everyone's communication toolbox. And it doesn't mean that what you're doing now is wrong. It just means that this is another option for you. And maybe you could up your game in certain areas.
All very important. And I think we should definitely take the points that you highlighted and up our game.
I appreciate it.
So, Robert, we talked a lot about storytelling in the world of HR data analytics, and I think we took away a lot of lessons about how we can make much more impactful stories. We started talking about the focus and how do you use data to change people's thinking around a topic. And then we talked about how to actually make the topic or the data be impactful for people. And then we talked about how to actually appropriately use visuals and your voice to highlight the important parts of the story. Any last things that you wanted to add to be able to conclude?
Probably this is all important stuff. Don't try to do it all at once. Try to integrate different aspects of it. So if you're trying to say, I want to have an opening, a middle, and an end, do that first. And make sure that you become a good story writer and then think about story presenting. Or do it in the reverse. Just take the data you have now and say, how can I use my voice or my visuals to highlight certain aspects of it? Again, it's a long journey. It's a long path. Don't rush it. It takes a little bit of time.
Great ideas and great advice. And I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Robert.
A pleasure being here, David. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. And if you liked the episode, please share this with your friends who might find it interesting as well. Also, please hit the subscribe button. Thank you very much. Please stay safe.
That was HR Data Labs. Please visit TuretskyConsulting.com/podcast to review the show, add comments about this episode, or add new ideas about upcoming shows you'd like to hear. Feel free to be creative, but please be nice. Thank you for joining us this week on the HR Data Labs podcast, and stay tuned for our next episode. Stay safe.